Warning, the podcast you are about to hear is often based on true events and people. It chronicles the dialogue and actions of random, anonymous, obnoxious, self-entitled, unintelligent, self-centered idiots, attention whores, ignoramuses, dolts, clods, nimrods, douches, weirdos, drama queens, overly sensitive crybabies, and people who think they are better, more important, and more special than the rest of us. In other words, amateurs. It's Amateur Nation with Lou Santini. We call attention to and call out the amateurs, the people who are doing life wrong, the speed bumps of life, the people that are in your way every day, the unintelligent, obnoxious, attention-whoring, self-entitled, drama queen, victim types who chip away at the moments of your life due to no self-awareness, common sense, manners, or social skills, and are disturbing the flow of the pros. Hi, Mom.
Oh, hi, Lou.
Amateur Nation, it's not just a podcast, it's a movement. Welcome to episode 75, The Five Amateurs You Meet in Hell. Okay, before we get started on the topics, I want to mention something. By no means am I perfect. And yes, I have committed acts of amateur behavior. But there's a difference between committing an act of amateur behavior and being an amateur. There's a reason my book talks about the amateur equation. Stupid plus obnoxious times rude divided by entitled plus inconsiderate equals amateur. There's also a reason that to be an amateur, you only need to have two of those factors. Adding more to the equation just intensifies it. Have I done stupid things? Yes. Have I done obnoxious things? Oh, of course. Have I done rude things? Yep. Have I been inconsiderate and acted self-entitled? Yes, I have. The difference is, amateurs either have a pattern of exhibiting at least two of those factors or go out of their way to exhibit two or more of those factors, and they do it on a regular basis because it's the only way they know how to behave. Look, people are flawed. Not everything is black and white, but you can certainly tell the difference between someone who does one of those things or acts in one of those ways and someone who is an amateur. I think you know what I mean. Here's what's happening in Amateur Nation. Topic number one. I'm a big proponent of writing letters to companies when I get bad service or a bad defective product. Same with good service and or good products. I don't write reviews online. I just don't. Good or bad. The way I see it, if a company or a product did their job, why do I need to praise them on their site? That they're doing their job. And if they suck, I just assume right to corporate. Emails, phone calls rarely get any action. I just go old school and type a carefully worded letter, doing my best to leave emotion out of it, and I'm always respectful, being careful where I place blame. And I'd say I get some kind of satisfaction or a refund, freebie, or an apology 9 out of 10 times. But I'll tell you what I don't do. I don't blame the waiter if the food sucks. I don't blame the chef if my bill is incorrect. Now, recently, I saw this tweet from an amateur who was desperate for attention. I thought about leaving his name out of it, but he's the one who posted his amateur status for the world to see on Twitter. He's at David Leavitt, at David underscore L-E-A-V-I-T-T, and he wrote this. I was just flying through Twitter, and I just stumbled upon this. Quote, I just had to call the police because Target refused to sell me the toothbrush. Yes, you heard me right. Now, apparently, an electric toothbrush was on display. It was being shown as a display model as being on sale for 1 cent. But that's because it's a display model. This amateur blamed the cashier and the store manager and thus called the police. While someone you love is being mugged, this guy tied up the police department over a typo. David Leavitt said, and I quote, the police said I need to sue them and that they are making me a verified report to take to court. Once again, amateurs rarely learn. Now the amateur thinks he's this great pioneer for consumer rights, adding, quote, corporations like Target are not above the law. The police officer told me that they'd testify, that they saw the price, and that the manager wouldn't sell me the item for the price listed. Oh, it just gets better. He also says, I have not been able to afford to go to a dentist in over 3 years. So yes, I was thrilled to see such an amazing price. Yes, 1 cent. Nothing fishy or odd about that, you idiot. But Target refused to honor it, and now I have to take them to court. David Leavitt, by his own description, is, quote, an award-winning multimedia journalist. You'd think Such an esteemed journalist could afford a $50 dental checkup in 3 years. From the 30 truths about amateurs, number one, amateurs seek constant attention. Number four, amateurs want what they want, how they want it, and when they want it. Number five, amateurs want it now. Number 21, amateurs will always try to abuse the system. Number 23, amateurs are loud. Number 27, amateurs are bored. Here's the pro angle, by the way. This does have a good news. The cashier that he bullied received $30,000 in donations to take a vacation. Topic number two. This amateur topic is unique as it's doubly, actually, dare I say it, triply amateur. It involves BO, which I've said, unless you're homeless, there's no excuse for it in 2020, airplanes, one of the main habitats of amateurs, and of course, the desperate cry for attention in the aftermath. It even has a little bit of karma in action. But the story has a lot of hang on a minutes, okay? Let me explain. From NBCNews.com and at least a dozen other news sources, here's your headline. Jewish family kicked off of a flight for having, quote, extremely offensive body odor, suing American Airlines. I hope I'm saying this guy's name right. Yehuda Yosef Adler and his wife Jenny are seeking unspecified damages in the suit filed in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Texas. The couple and their 19-month-old daughter had been attempting to fly back home to Detroit from a vacation in Miami last January. They claimed that a pilot instructed a gate agent to have them exit the plane because of their, quote, extremely offensive body odor. The couple said that they had showered that morning, the lawsuit states, and they said the gate agent, quote, made disparaging and derogatory statements telling the Adlers that he knew that Orthodox Jews bathed once a week, the lawsuit states. All right, here's one of those hang on a minutes. Good luck proving that. Good luck proving that the gate agent said that. It's his word against yours. I'm not saying you're right or wrong. I'm not saying he didn't say it. I'm being factual here. Good luck. How do you prove that? The article goes on to say the family's luggage continued on to their destination, and they were forced to take a later flight. The airline said multiple passengers complained about Mr. Adler's body odor. The decision was made out of concern for the comfort of our other passengers. Finally, an airline stands up for the greater good of the entire plane rather than one amateur. Unlike when American Airlines allowed a miniature horse onto the plane, as was told in a previous episode of Amateur Nation. In fact, that was a nominee for Amateur of the Year. The article continues. Court documents claim that the pilot for the flight was, quote, nasty and humiliating towards the family when they boarded the plane and when they asked for headphones. Here comes another one of those, hang on a minute, good luck proving that. First of all, why is the pilot talking to the passengers as they board? I mean, I get it. I've seen the pilot standing there saying good morning and hi and stuff, but nasty and humiliating. Good luck proving that. The article goes on and says, taking their seats, the couple claimed they had not been seated for more than 5 minutes when they were instructed by a gate agent who told the family that there was an emergency and they needed to deplane. Hang on a minute. I'm no expert, but I don't think a gate agent can throw around the word emergency when there isn't one. I mean, that's a lie. That someone has BO is bad, but that's not an emergency. So I don't know how you prove that. If they said, we have an emergency, you need to get off, just the two of you, that would be lawsuit because the emergency only affects the two of them, the three of them. And if you're making them afraid or something like that, that could be bad. But I just don't see how that happened. But I could be wrong. I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm just reporting. The agent reportedly told the family that they needed to deplane because they had, quote, extremely offensive body odor, but would only tell the Adlers that the direction came from the pilot. All right, now that does sound credible. The pilot has final say. I mean, that's just the way it is. But that structure of sentence sounds credible. That the pilot told the gate agent, we need to have them removed for the comfort of the other passengers. I believe that. And if that's the case, good for him. Offended by the sentiment, the Adlers expressed shock and informed the agent that they had never been informed about problems with their odor, adding that they had showered that very morning. It was then that the gate agent, quote, made disparaging and derogatory statements telling the Adlers that he knew that Orthodox Jews bathe once a week, the lawsuit states. Okay, hang on a minute. Why would the gate agent have that as their response to the Adler statement? If the gate agent said that, well, then he or she is definitely done. They're out of a job, and American Airlines has another problem, and a major problem. But it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. Why a gate agent would say, hey, you know what? I know Orthodox Jews bathe at least once a week. I just don't. If that person said that, that could be one of the dumbest things ever said. You know you're going to lose your job and you're going to get sued. But I wasn't there. This is a story that's still in development. The lawsuit adds that the family embarrassingly approached people in the boarding area and asked them to confirm whether or not they had a bad smell. More than 20 people answered in the negative, according to the suit. Hang on a minute, I'm going to need proof. And not to mention, some people out of courtesy might lie. Oh no, you smell fine, knowing that I'm going to be away from here in 10 seconds anyway, so just be nice. They don't know what the backstory is. They don't think they're answering a question that could be held up in a court of law. So there's another hang on a minute. In addition to being kicked off the aircraft, the family asserts that their luggage stayed on the plane and went on to their destination. The family was without clothing and most of the things needed for the baby. All right, that is a major screw up, but it also wouldn't be the first time luggage didn't make it to a destination or went to a destination without you. That's normal. If you're getting removed from the plane and you're already on the runway, chances are your luggage is staying on that plane and going to wherever you were supposed to be going. The article says the delay deprived the Adlers of their contractual right to fly based on their purchase ticket with American Airlines, the lawsuit reads. All right, hang on a minute. No one has a right to fly. You have a privilege to fly if you obey all the rules of the airline, and if you're majorly disrupting the passengers' travel, that is, disturbing the flow of the pros, rights revoked, privilege revoked. Amateurs, they have a right to, just because they breathe. The article goes on to say the Adlers were seriously inconvenienced, treated as criminals. All right, hang on a minute. No, they weren't. They weren't arrested. They weren't charged with a crime. They were removed for body odor. They were not treated as criminals. Humiliated, insulted, defamed, missed appointments, incurred incidental expenses, and suffered trauma and emotional distress. The family also takes issue with the airline's continuation of the narrative that they smelled. They claim that now when body odor is searched online, results show the Adler name. Hang on a minute. Yeah, that's called the internet. I mean, how many of us have Googled our own names? You wouldn't believe the stuff that comes up when I Google Lou Santini. I mean, I know there's a hockey coach by that name, but I mean, other stuff like, how is this coming up with my name? The couple say that the defendants discriminated against them as Orthodox Jews, identifying their clothing with their religion and race. All right, hang on a minute. Good luck proving that. Yeah, how are you going to prove that they singled them out? Because they are Orthodox Jews. They cannot be the first Orthodox Jews to ever fly on an American Airlines plane or any plane for that matter. I'm sure the rest flew without incident. The article says the Adlers suffered and will continue in the future to suffer trauma, stigmatization, severe mental and emotional distress, depression, despair, repugnance. Hang on a minute. How do you suffer from repugnance? Embarrassment, public humiliation, damage to personal reputation, anxiety, fear, and apprehension associated with airports and flying, loss of appetite, insomnia, and migraines, the suit reads. All right, hang on a minute. Now you're just stupid. A bad flight experience has caused you to have migraines. Stop. What else? Erectile dysfunction? PMS? Okay, come on. The Adlers are being pressured to see their race and religion as inferior to that of whites, dirty and unwelcome. Hang on a minute. Now you're fucking reaching. I'm sorry that if they get kicked off a plane for BO, whether it's true or not, all of a sudden now you're pressured to see your race and religion as inferior. That's on you, weak-minded amateur. American Airlines denied the claims and said the family were removed from the plane after several complaints. Somehow I feel that American Airlines can prove that. The airline said the Adler family was asked to deplane after multiple passengers and our crew members complained about Mr. Adler's body odor. The decision was made out of concern for the comfort of our other passengers. Our team members took care of the family and provided hotel accommodations and meals and rebooked them on a flight to Detroit the next morning. Pretty nice of them, if you ask me. Now look, I'm only going by what I've read thus far on at least a dozen different news websites. And I'll keep an eye on this should it play out that the Adlers were indeed mistreated and thrown under the bus, but something tells me that American Airlines will settle just to get this handled. But I really hope they don't. I mean, here I am saying I will never fly American Airlines because they let that miniature horse on the plane. But I don't think American Airlines should settle if they didn't do anything wrong. The Adlers are suing for $75,000. That is an odd number, if you ask me. By the way, 33% of that's going to go to the attorneys, so they are basically saying that for 50 grand, you could be humiliated and kicked off of a plane. Or you could shower and use deodorant. Topic number three. From thegoodmenproject.com. An article entitled, "The Psychology Behind Attention-Seeking Behavior in Adults." I'm going to bullet point five things. These are five ways that adults seek attention. Number one, hysteria, emotional outbursts for no reason at all. I defer to my example that's in my book, Amateur Nation, The Decline of Common Sense, Manners, and Social Skills, from a real true life thing that actually happened to me when I was in a store called Big Lots, kind of a just a catch-all. I'd go there to buy like candles and hummingbird feeders and things I normally don't buy at the grocery store. Good prices, right? Very stripped down type store. So you're not getting a lot of, ambiance, but you are going to get good prices and pretty good service. A couple years ago, I was in line, about third in line at the Big Lots store, and in comes this woman. No exaggeration. The automatic doors open. She had one foot in the door and she leaned her head back and yelled, and I'm going to do it right now. "Where's the motherfucking whiteout up in this bitch?" Right? That's someone who has emotional outbursts for no reason at all and wants attention. I went on to say, it's like, first of all, who's buying whiteout in the year, well, back then it was, what, 2018? Second of all, that could be the first time anyone ever asked for whiteout in that manner. And then third of all, of course, they had no whiteout because it was 2018. Number two way that adults will seek attention is playing the victim. Well, we certainly talk about that a lot in this show. That's self-explanatory. Number three, being the indispensable. They forcibly insert themselves into your daily routine. Subconsciously, they want you to be totally dependent on them. Number four, pretending to be ill, meaning they want sympathy. These are the people who have anxiety due to the things that the rest of us pros deal with every day. Work, bills, errands, maybe not getting the job, money, or body that we want, whatever, life. And number five, acting busy. See all social media. Everyone is traveling, dining, laughing, living their best life. So the article goes on to list the reasons behind such behaviors. Number one, social media usage generates the feeling of recognition and fame, automatically develops the desire for attention. Where have I heard that before? Oh, I don't know, just about every goddamn episode of this podcast and my book. Number two, childhood loneliness or being pampered as a child, and now that they're an adult, they need that same attention. That makes sense. And number three, peer pressure. When we see our peers getting more attention than us, we get envious and desire the same. I invite you to go back and listen to that list one more time on this podcast, and you'll be like, oh, I see what Lou's talking about. You got five reasons how amateurs try to get attention and three valid reasons on why they probably seek it. Time now for 60 seconds. Let's get some random neural firings going. Start the timer. 1917. Good movie. Not even close to Best Picture. Not even in the same conversation as a Saving Private Ryan or Full Metal Jacket, but a good movie. I will no longer wait for it. You know, I'm starting to warm up to more foods with blueberries in them. I think I'm growing as a person. Hollywood movie pet peeve. Anytime I watch a movie that takes place in a newsroom, there's always these things. The mandatory two people walking tandem full speed through the maze of desks shot. The constant witty overlapping banter where everyone in the newsroom, even the extras, have the wit of Johnny Carson and Don Rickles going back and forth. And the editor-in-chief, after talking with his one, possibly two-star reporters, will take off his glasses and throw them on his or her desk in an act of exasperation. Time now for three pro things. Three things that are done right. And serve as a reminder that not all hope is lost. The world still can go fully pro. Number one. after reporting a story about a woman who tried unsuccessfully to bring an emotional support peacock onto a plane, a woman who did bring a miniature horse onto a plane, and other examples of turkeys, hamsters, pigs, and squirrels, finally, as found on multiple websites and news agencies, these headlines. Airlines would be allowed to ban emotional support animals, allow only service dogs under new proposal. Emotional support animals could soon be banned from planes. The Department of Transportation is considering new rules that would restrict service animals on airplanes to specially trained dogs. All right, look. As I've said, while of course I've never been against service dogs or small domesticated, easily stored emotional support animals on flights, it doesn't take a genius to see how amateurs have been and will continue to abuse this system and circumvent procedure. And once horses and pigs and turkeys get on board, and it's a long shot, but how long before a terrorist tries to smuggle a horse bomb on board? Ridiculous? Really? Remember when some idiot tried to bomb a shoe? What better way to pull that crap than to rely on the "aw, cute" factor, and next thing you know, kaboom. So finally, some common sense. To paraphrase from multiple news sources, quote, "The proposed changes include only allowing specially trained service dogs to qualify as service animals. Any other animal used for emotional support or simply to make a passenger, quote, feel better would be considered a pet, and airlines would not be required to allow them on board," the Department of Transportation said. "Passengers flying with service animals would also be limited to 2 animals per travel and required to check in 1 hour earlier than those without, among other regulations." Wait a minute, 2? 2 animals per 1 person? Why is that a thing? Passengers wanting to ride with a service dog would instead have to fill out a federal form attesting that their dog is trained to do work or perform tasks for the benefit of a person with a disability. The dog would need similar proof of good behavior, good health, and having the ability to not relieve itself or to do so in a sanitary manner. Finally, number 2. From February 2020, Car and Driver, that's like this month, folks, an article called "Learning Curve" that speaks of the risk in untested yet totally released to the unskilled public technology that is autonomous cars. In the very first paragraph, I saw the words "guinea pigs," and I knew this article was pro. Some things that were mentioned for those of you who still, "Oh my God, I love autonomous cars." "We are now living in the greatest social experiment since the horseless carriage shared the road with actual horses." That's a great analogy. And the article says, which raises a couple of questions. How do you safely and ethically conduct testing of heavy machinery in an environment shared by a non-consenting and even unaware public? And when something goes wrong, as it has and will again, what then? Phil Koopman, a Carnegie Mellon University engineering professor, said, "Do you take an airplane and say, let's fly around and see if it crashes? No, you do good engineering first." Adding, "Testing alone doesn't make you safe. If the test is, we're going to drive around a lot and it looks okay, well, that didn't prove anything." The article goes on to say that social media sites are littered with evidence that overly trusting drivers routinely use the driver assistance system as if it were more capable than it is. Despite the incomplete development and rampant abuse, autopilot is now installed on every new Tesla sold, leaving untrained drivers to discover its inadequacies in traffic. At its worst, autopilot inspires false confidence, leading to driver inattention, leading to a fatal crash. In autonomous vehicle development, public roads are the laboratory, the car is the experiment, and you are the guinea pig. James Owens, NHTSA acting administrator, said, "We will establish safety standards when we determine that the technology is proven." Oh, well, that's reassuring. I've always said autonomous drivers would just ignore the world around them. Here's one of the many examples to come. A Tesla Model 3 slammed into a police car and a broken down vehicle. The driver was using autopilot and said he was busy checking on his dog in the back seat at the time of the crash. I'm not trying to be an alarmist here. I'm not anti-technology. I am so anti-autonomous cars. It's dangerous. It's not even close to being tested. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. There are military and industrial and agricultural applications for autonomy when it comes to vehicles, but the regular roads that are shared by inexperienced drivers who just got their licenses, elderly drivers who have slower reaction times and don't understand the technology, and a million other reasons based on city size, traffic signals, And skill, you're relying on the skill set of all the other drivers to know what the hell's going on when you're driving an autonomous car. It's a recipe for disaster. Which leads me to number three. The documentary called Autonomy. It's on Amazon, it's $4, and it's executive produced by the famous author Malcolm Gladwell, and contributors from Car and Driver, Road and Track magazine, and other people involved in car production, technology, manufacturing, marketing, etc., and plenty of civilians. It's barely an hour long. It's everything I've been saying since I started this podcast when it comes to autonomous vehicles. I'm not saying I know more than any of these guys, that's for sure. But it's nice to hear the sentiments of everything that I've expressed and predicted and thought about regarding the freedoms we will lose, the privacy that will be invaded, the dangers of giving up control, the dangers of having your autonomous vehicle and thousands of other ones around the world hacked in an instant, the when, not if, autonomous cars that will be hacked and chaos that will ensue, and the future of driving. For $4, your eyes will be opened and you will have a great topic to discuss with friends and family. I'm telling you, you won't regret it. One question that they never answer in this documentary: is regular driving that hard for you? Are you that tired? You need to sleep and relax while on the road? Every commercial, flashback, etc. started with, wouldn't it be nice to take your hands off the wheel and sit back and relax? No. Why? Because you can? The same could be said for, oh, wouldn't it be great to eat dinner without having to chew? Wouldn't it be great to go to the bathroom without having to push? Wouldn't it be great to be able to go to the gym without exercising? Why don't amateurs want any activity anymore? That's the problem. Driving is not hard if you do it right and pay attention, stop texting, get your pet out of the front seat. Yes, traffic sucks. So does waiting in line at the movies. So does waiting for your food at a restaurant. When you're driving, you're sitting down, for crying out loud, and if you're not good at it or afraid of it, don't do it. Hire an Uber, get a cab, take a train or a bus. But trusting a computer to do it for you because you think you'll be saving time to do other things is ludicrous. As this documentary points out, one of the people interviewed said something along the lines of, all of this technology at our disposal was supposed to save us time. Has it? No. 12 different platforms to hear this show, so if you have a friend who you think would dig my valid hilarity and hilarious validity, and they don't listen using the same platform as you, spread the gospel. And as an experiment, if you missed last week's episode, the 2019, the second annual Emmy Awards, I actually downloaded the entire full episode on YouTube. I realize some people don't have Bluetooth anywhere, or maybe they don't feel like downloading another app. Man, do I understand that. But if you're at your home or your office and you just want to have it on in the background while you work or relax or whatever, you can do it on YouTube. I just experimented with that last episode, and yeah, it's a long one. It has to be. It recapped the entire year, but I think you're going to love the effort, the time, and work I put into that. No lie, there was about 30 hours of work that went into that one episode, okay? So if you got a friend who's unfamiliar with my work, start them off, send them to Amazon to download my book, Amateur Nation, The Decline of Common Sense, Manners, and Social Skills, or just send them to my website, lousantini.com. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can email me there too. Remember, amateurs, we see you. You're not at home. Don't do life wrong. Go pro. Don't be an amateur. For Amateur Nation, I'm Lou Santini, and this has been a big major production.
Thanks, Lou. We'll see you next week.